This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Thursday, May 6, 2021. So we had an interesting attempt at a comeback yesterday in the U.S., and we have Asia back online overnight, at least China and Japan, the two biggest markets out there after their long holiday this week. China was trading negatively and Japan quite positively. But in the U.S. yesterday, a rally attempt after the pretty steep sell-off the prior day and volatility around Yellen's comments on interest rates generally failed, and we closed to slight new lows, as you can see on slide two on the NASDAQ 100. And managed to have a meager gain on the broader S&P 500. Just noting a couple of technical points as we're wondering if this is going to develop into something bigger. I think on the NASDAQ 100, we need to see something like a rollover through the 13,300 and to 350 area. You can see there, that's the Fibonacci retracement. And then the bigger one at 61.8. But the really, really big level here, if we're, and we're so far from there at the moment, quite a bit more than the distance we've traveled from the top so far. And that is that huge level, the dotted line I drew in. It's probably a few points off because this is a continuously rolled future that I'm putting on the, that I put in the chart here. But you can see that 12,500 area where the 200-day moving average is also converging down quite a bit lower. So that's where I'd be looking for this, you know, consolidation to becoming something bigger. In terms of the sector performance, Peter, providing this chart for us this morning. He's not on the call today. Wanted to pull out the incredible spread between the month-to-date performance of the commodity sector, where we're seeing tons of action. And I'll get to Ola in a moment on that. Month-to-date up 3.6%, year-to-date up 21.8%. Compare that with the bubble stock story, which has just faded incredibly, I think, and we've speculated some of that may be on the interest in the crypto space, people pulling the plug on some of the more speculative plays and equities and heading over to crypto with their speculative funds. Month to date, minus 7.8%, which is most of the year to date decline as well at minus 10%. So, and then I think one of the more interesting things we've got driving a different angle on inflation and commodity risk is on the real yield space, where we're seeing a lot of movement. Ola, we've seen real yields, and we kind of put up a similar chart. I just wanted to contrast in the chart that I created for slide four. The nominal yields are in blue there, and you can see, of course, we are getting towards the lows. There's some data yesterday in the U.S. I'll get to in a moment. But with break-even inflation levels, in other words, how the market is pricing the fear of inflation out in the future, it's rising. They're rising quite a bit. So in contrast to the big rise we saw in February and March, we're seeing quite a steep decline. And this is very supportive of gold, isn't it?
It is, well, it actually should be, John, but so far it hasn't. Gold has been stuck in this, $30, $40 range now for a while. We've had five failed attempts to break above the 1800 level. We are trading just a few dollars below right now. So let's see where we are at the end of the day. But you're actually right. If you look at slide five, you can just see this divergence currently between real yields and break-evens. Break-evens hitting the highest level in 8 years. That's 10-year, in a 10-year tenor. And with that, we're seeing, with nominal yields not going anywhere at this moment in time, we are basically seeing the result in real yields, which is back down to negative 90 basis points. And that's really having a, that's really the one thing, key driver that should take gold higher at this point. So we'll see. I think it's slightly disappointing for at this moment in time that we are not higher. Perhaps the recent dollar strength may just add a little bit of a counter to it. But let's see. If we do break above, then just like you mentioned, 200-day moving to the downside in the NASDAQ, the 200-day moving average to the upside in gold could take it up towards that 1850 level. So I think that would be the next level of focus if we should manage to break above.
All right. And I'll tell you, you've got also some similar thoughts, or at least some similar perspective on your slide six, looking, breaking out those break-even rates as well. There really does seem to be a chase on to hedge against inflation. It's not creating, obviously not creating nominal yield gains, but the activity is elsewhere. And you're pointing out the tips as well.
Yeah, absolutely, John. Well, the thing is that I would like to highlight is that if real yields continue to drop, they are going to be supportive for the corporate space. And maybe that explains a little bit why we are seeing spreads in the high-yield corporate space compressing. Actually, if we take the spread between investment-grade corporates and high-yield corporates, it has reached the lowest point since 2008. So basically it means that there is a very little pickup you can get from churning from high-quality assets into risky assets. And right now, that average spread you would get, it's less than 200 basis points, around 195. But the point here, John, is that if we have inflation rising, and we have seen yesterday the five-year break-even rate breaking above 2.70% for the first time since 2008, and we have central banks worldwide tapering, then we must see nominal yields rising at a certain point. So we are going through some consolidation area, but the trend is going to be bearish in the midterm anyway.
When you say trend bearish, that means yields higher, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Bearish for U.S. Treasuries, but yields higher. Absolutely.
And then there was a lot of focus recently on the Bund, the German Bund, the 10-year German sovereign paper, looking like it was trying to break out to the upside. That's been disappointed here in the recent days. But you're pointing to some pretty heavy issuance out of Europe today. Do you think that could move nominal yields here?
Yeah, the thing is that yesterday we have seen Greece, which is one of the riskiest countries or sovereigns in the European space, issuing five-year notes, and it was a complete success. Greece was able to issue 3 billion euros worth of five-year notes, and books were above 20 billion euros, so demands above six times. In slide 7, I put together the five-year Greek yields and the five-year Italian BTP yields. And as you can see, they are basically the same. Greece is offering for 5 years 0.17%, and Italy is offering around 0.15%. But the big highlight here, John, is that people that are buying into Greece, they are buying into a riskier sovereigns and also much more volatile. And in the chart that you have in slide 7, you can see that in March last year, where Italian yields were not as volatile as Greek yields. Today, we will have Spain issuing 3, 5, and 10 years bonos, and France issuing 10-year OATs. And I believe that is going to be very important to see how these securities price, especially because we see bond yields pointing higher.
Yeah, and just for perspective, the five-year bobble of the German paper is yielding minus 60 basis points. And the German-Italy 10-year spread has widened out to 112 basis points. I just pulled that up on my screen. So yeah, interesting to see also if the spread widening, if yields go higher generally in the EU, if the spread widening continues and what the ECB, I suppose, says about that. And now, focusing on Europe, but also the UK. We have a pretty critical day here in the UK for two reasons. One of those, of course, the Bank of England. And it's a little bit unusual, I think, here relative to some of the other central banks, because we have a market that's getting quite antsy to see some movement on the bank, or a shift in guidance from the Bank of England, has kind of priced that in with sort of the forward expectations for Bank of England moves actually close to the highs of the cycle for some kind of lift off and somewhere out into late 2022. So it'll be looking for confirmation of that. It'll be looking for a solid upgrade to the growth forecast for the Bank of England after a very, very cautious set of forecasts at the most recent forecast set in February. And also if the guidance for when inflation is perceived as being sustainably above that 2% level is brought forward a little bit. In any case, the interesting thing is the market is positioned for quite a hawkish shift and doesn't get as much as it wants. So it's a little bit easier to surprise on the negative side. But certainly it could find support either way. And I would say that Sterling is priced a little bit cautiously relative to where expectations have moved for the Bank of England. And you can see on slide eight, the cable there, the 140, such a critical level to the upside. Again, as I see U.S. real yields just absolutely plunging, it's a strong headwind for the U.S. dollar. So if you see risk appetite stabilizing here and those real yields lower, you know, it's about as good a story as you can get, or support you can get for a weaker dollar. And if the dollar's not weakening, we need to come up with some explanations. So that's a key event risk for the UK. The other event risk is one that's a much slower burn, but something we really need to track, and that is the Scottish parliamentary vote today. There are a number of local elections across the UK, but the most interesting one are those in Scotland, where the parliament is up. So the entire Scottish Parliament is being elected, and that's 129 seats. The SNP, Scottish National Party, expected to get an absolute majority. And of course, the story goes, the narrative goes, that they will clamor for a new independence vote. And then we'll have to look for the time frame of that. Boris Johnson is against holding a new referendum, but it looks like a majority, popular majority, is now in favor of leave. I think this will take quite some time to settle. Also, how much of this is mixed up into the pandemic situation and so on. But let's watch and see what happens and how the rhetoric shapes up in the wake of that. But speaking of the UK, I'll say you also have a perspective on gilt yields as they are heading towards 1%. It's hard to believe that they're around half of what the US 10-year yields, but there you go. What's your perspective there? We've really been bottled up in this range in yield terms for quite some time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The thing is that, like you said before, the market is expecting the Bank of England to be hawkish today and actually announce some tapering under their quantitative easing program. And, you know, how can the bond market react? Well, the bond market will sell off bonds because yields are at historic low levels, even though we have seen a fast rise since the beginning of the year until today. So in slide 10, you have the 10-year gilt yield. And as you can see, yields have been rising quite fast since February until March. And then from March, they've been trading within an ascending trend line, but still below the resistance line of 0.85%. If today we see 10 years yields breaking above this resistance line, they will rise fast to 1%. But I want to highlight, John, that even though sentiment is bearish, yesterday the HR Treasuries has issued two bonds that were very well received by the public with maturity 2031 and 2046. Demand was very high, and in the case of 2046, the yield that these notes were issued at was actually lower than 1 month prior. So basically it shows that there is still good appetite for gilts out there, even though yields are still very much compressed.
Okay. And this whole story around yields and the nominal yields are still a bit stuck in the range, and even rejecting higher attempts combined with all the inflation hubbub. Ola, to what degree do you get the sense that you've mentioned this a bit in internal calls and recently on the podcast as well, that there's a rush for hedging inflation by buying up commodities. So ironically, you get I recall back in 2008 as well, that incredible ramp in 2008 in crude oil prices to it was almost $150 a barrel was partly on or very largely on a rush to consider commodities as some new, latest flavor of the day asset class. What's your take on that general trend?
Well, I think with the continued focus on commodities and the rally we've seen so far this year, that we are seeing an increased investment, investor interest coming into commodities, and that obviously raises the question: how do you invest in commodities? Most of the most of those seeking a hedge against inflation in general, I think they're looking for these commodity indices, which basically has a broad exposure across the commodity space. And that basically means every time a dollar is invested into one of these indices, that obviously benefit the underlying components because they have to be bought by the index provider. Three of the big ones are the S&P, GSCI, Bloomberg Commodity Index, and the Deutsche Bank Optimal Yield. And what we're finding there is that the main beneficiary is basically energy sector, and it's in a particularly oil. If you so in general, if you put a dollar into one of these funds, between 30 and 60 cents will go to go towards the energy space, and if you drill a little bit deeper, then something between 15 and 30 cents will go into the oil market. So that's one of the reasons why, as well, we see oil continue to be supportive. Not only does the fundamental outlook continue to improve, but we're also seeing the investment demand coming in. So it's kind of a almost a vicious circle that the higher the commodity price goes, the bigger the demand for inflation hedges. So that's one of the things we're seeing. But just want to finish off on the agricultural space, just highlighting that the area that is probably increasingly of a concern is the agricultural space. So we got the UN FAO's Global Food Price Index coming out later this morning, and remember it rose 25% annually back in March. It's clearly going to be showing another increase for April. And the key pulling of the market right now is basically Brazil. The drought is continuing. There's a 14-day window where there's no rain forecast, and that basically means corn, coffee, sugar, they're all surging on the back of that. And you can see that on slide 9. I'll just put in the coffee chart. Coffee reached $1.50 yesterday. That's the highest level in 4 years. So even coffee, which has been a bit of a laggard, is starting to show some momentum here.
All right. And then as we watch for that, and we watch for that interesting oil price near the top of the range at $70 a barrel, we're also looking at earnings continuing to roll in this week. So a couple of really big names reporting today, especially Volkswagen. You can see on slide 11, the incredible ramp we've seen in Volkswagen this year on anticipation of its turnaround. And I guess hopes around the incredibly aggressive rollout of electrical vehicle models. And as well, we have Moderna. That's an interesting one because of the news story that was pretty much the top of the news heap this morning. That is that the U.S. is looking into this idea of waiving patents on COVID vaccines. And Moderna is a company that's essentially, that's its only horse it can ride on. So BioNTech was the company that was, I noted this morning, was down sharply. But Moderna was also very impacted yesterday by this news item. And it will be reporting earnings today. So look for that. There's concerns from the lobbying group expressed that this could mean poor quality counterfeits of the vaccines, et cetera. But this would be a key part of so-called vaccine diplomacy. And then tomorrow we have the BMW following up after Volkswagen's report today. And just briefly, a very busy calendar on the macro side. If you look at slide 11, you can see why that is. We've got after we're recording this, the Norges Bank is out, expected to be the first G10 central bank to hike rates. Let's see if they're moving the goalposts there. It's had a pretty solid run of it here on this latest rise in oil prices. Bank of England already covered that. Turkey, they're expected to stay pat on rates, and they'll probably need to for sure to keep and to continue to send out a message of stability to keep that Turkish lira rate relatively supported. And just a number of other bits and pieces, Fed Williams out later. It was interesting, Rosengren bringing up the issue of MBS purchases, so mortgage-backed security purchases, and whether these is maybe the first indication I've seen on that specific issue. Why does the Fed need to continue to buy mortgage-backed securities so aggressively? And then we have an RBA policy statement tonight, as well as the China Caixin private services PMI and the big jobs data tomorrow. The ADP, to recap yesterday's US data, was a bit disappointing, 742K versus 850K increase in payrolls, private payrolls expected. And that was after a slight revision to the data to 561K positive in March. That March figure contrasted with the 900 plus K on the official non-farms payroll change. So, and the expectations today are for around a million, or not today, for tomorrow's U.S. jobs report are for around a million. But we'll preview that a bit more tomorrow. And then on the ISM services side, instead of rising to a new high of 64.1 from March's 63.7, it dipped a little bit to 62.7. I think it's tough to get too pessimistic about a number like that. It still means things that are improving at a near record pace for that survey. So it's going to take a couple of months to get any impression out of that particular survey. I think that'll be a wrap for today. Please tune in tomorrow for the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.